Bruder in deinem Arm ist gesandt. Rune Master used to say something that from a non-Buddhist point of view would sound very strange indeed. You actually have to pay your dues to get into hell. You have to have enough merit to get into hell. And this next plate, this plate we're working on presently, is a series of plates, 5 through 9, which is entitled Entry to the Abyss, shows a perfect example of this. Of course, there has to be a big stipulation here that, you know, the your route into hell matters a lot. Whether it's the merit route into the hell or the letting everything slide to end up into hell, in hell. And this is the merit route we're talking about into hell. The merit route into hell. And there are different routes. It's the difference between what Ramesh used to call the right hand and the left hand path. You want to try to avoid, if at all possible, taking the left hand path. That's the non perceptual path. The left hand path is where you have to learn everything the hard way by going to excess in everything and finding out the hard way that that don't work. The perceptual path is still a hard path, and it's a lot lighter path. And both of them will eventually lead you to hell. The perceptual path won't stick you there for as long. But we have to spend some time in hell. And the entry to the abyss is really the entry into the hell of that's part of a really deep sangha, where you really have to face the truth about your actions. I did the first paragraph yesterday. I won't go back over that. But just a reminder, Rim Master is in the vision that she's having at the time. She's sitting facing this great black lotus in the midst of this immense darkness. And nothing matters, glowing in red on it. And to the left, this iron pillar, which is the pillar of the eternal. She says, a taunting voice inside me says, better by far to jump into the great black lotus, to enter the abyss of despair. What point is there in going on, bleeding and cut and torn? Jump in, why not? The first voice says, you have no reason to do that. The other says, why not? There is a beautiful tree outside. It is a beautiful evening, says my disciple when I ask him why I should continue to live. That was where Master Daizui, of course. What have I to do with these things? I reply. What is the point? A voice comes from the pillar. Remember, the pillar represents the eternal. The voice comes from the pillar. It is not my problem that you fall into despair. It does not matter to me that you die. I am eternal. It does not matter in the least if you should die. Go ahead if you wish. Jump into the abyss. But I do not want to die, I cry. I do not want to die. There's another choice being made here. You know, at the time that she's making this choice, this is the thing why so much faith is required. You never know the implications of the choice you're making, the full implications when you make it. In 1998, 99, Master Moki and I had a little poem we kept reciting to each other. I don't even remember which one of us it came up for. The poem went like this: you say yes and do not know where your willingness will go. We say yes and do not know where our willingness will go. And this is the thing. This is another crucial choice here. The choice is basically, go into despair and die. Because at this point, you know, if she goes into despair, she will die. And this is basically the refuge of oblivion. You know, it's so painful and so difficult. You know, one refuge is the suicide route, basically. Just end it all. Of course, it doesn't end at all when people do that. Of course, this is the thing. The karma goes rolling merrily along, and you enter the bardo states, and for especially for suicides, it's awful. But the oblivion the oblivion. If you've ever been in great pain, you know the oblivion has a real appeal. The oblivion has a real appeal, and this is why people commit suicide. Just to end it, just to put an end to it. And that is the root of despair. What's the other one? What's the other option? Well, this is the thing, you don't know what's coming. But you can be pretty sure it's more pain. Because life is, life is permeated with suffering. And this is someone in deep spiritual suffering who's really, whether she knows it or not with her head, is sensing there's going to be hell to pay if I keep going here. Another thing about this I really want to point out, this is kind of the end of the road here. This entry to the abyss is the end of the road for willpower. This is how far you can get yourself with willpower. Then it's got to start to turn. I mean, it already has, and I've indicated that. But it's got to really turn in the direction of the true surrender to the eternal. Surrendering yourself into the hands of the eternal completely, and the willingness then takes the place of the willpower. You can get yourself this far with willpower, and that's as far as you go. Then more is needed. And more is then called out of you if you choose the path of life. And this is not just the path of physical life. She's choosing the path of spiritual life, as difficult as it is. Not going with the despair. Not choosing oblivion, or the delusion of oblivion, of course. Not choosing the delusion of oblivion, it's choosing life in the true sense. Not just physical life, but spiritual life. When the Master cries out, I do not want to die. Well, it is just in part just the animal urge to live, and it's more than that. This is someone who's given her life to the eternal, given her life to the deepest spiritual path a person can walk. You know, this is choosing to go on in that path no matter what it means. At the time, you don't, your head doesn't get all this. You look back on it and then you see more what your choice implied. But this is another time of very great and important choice here. She says, I cry, I do not want to die. I draw back from the abyss, from the great black lotus towering in front of me. You draw back from the abyss of despair. And remember, right in the midst of that abyss, what's written on the lotus? Nothing matters. That can be the nothing matters of despair, of giving up. But it's also it's the nothing matters of truth. External things don't matter. Throw yourself completely into the hand of the eternal. As I said yesterday, the obverse or converse side of nothing matters in this true spiritual sense is hold fast to the Lord of the house. Hold fast to the eternal. So she has refused the nothing matters of despair. And she is going with the nothing matters of the spirit. External things don't matter. this is, you know, I've told many times this story that, you know, that fall when we came to our winter retreat, just around the same time in the year that we're doing our retreat now, early December, you know, and I came up at the end of the retreat and asked my question. I was in a very, very dark place and very, very confused, and all I knew that was that I didn't know anything. And I knelt before Reverend Master and I asked, I just posed my situation. Basically, I had no foundation under me. And she just said, just don't worry about external things. And that became my nothing matters at that time. That I held on to that for dear life for the next couple months. About 2 months later, I had my Kensho. That was my mantra. That just don't worry about external things. You see, it can be expressed in different ways and words. It always comes down to the same thing. You've got to turn inward. You've got to meditate. You've got to meditate. You've got to trust like you never trusted before. You don't know what's coming. You can't afford to care. You know, at that time, my physical life was not on the line. My spiritual life was on the line, and I knew it. When Reverend Master, in the spring of that same year, when she was in this, when she had gone into retreat, and she was sitting in front of that black lotus, well, she knew her physical life was on the line. And more importantly, it was her spiritual life on the line. There's not a fundamental difference. It's the spiritual life that is our true life. And what does it mean to say spiritual life is on the line? Well, am I going to harmonize with the eternal this time around, or is it going to be put off for some other poor devil to have to try it with the mess I've left him? That's what it means. Am I going to go for it in this lifetime? She says, I draw back from the abyss. Remember, nothing matters. Remember, nothing matters. Remember the scriptures. Mindfulness is all. Over the mountains, up to this black abyss, that which matters most, mindfulness. Mindfulness in every moment meditation. Every moment, faith. Every moment, surrendering into the arms of the eternal. Every moment, listening. And like I said yesterday, at this point, your whole being is asking. Really listening. That's mindfulness. Mindfulness is all, and nothing matters. The scriptures must be taken literally, for they were obviously obtained at death's door. There's a reason why we do those scriptures every morning. Why we do the basics, you know, the handful of scriptures we do over and over again. There's a reason. You've got to get them into your blood and bones. They're the distilled down teaching that is essential for pointing the way. It's at a time like this when these scriptures just light up. In red letters flashes across my mind a quote from the Most Excellent Mirror Samadhi. Never come too close nor put yourself too far away. Do not come too close to the abyss. Do not put yourself too far away from it. In other words, don't go plunging into the abyss of despair. Don't forget, life is short. Don't forget, existence is transitory. Don't get complacent. It is important, she says, it is important to always remember that the abyss exists. Otherwise, one will become safe in one's own mind and not notice falling into it. And that's really true. That is so true. There's no quicker way in complacency. Oh, you know, it doesn't matter. It'll all work out. Don't leave it up to chance. She says, as I stand before it, for now I am standing up. For now I am standing. The absolute upright. You know, of course, in reality, she was so weak she couldn't stand. This is in her vision of what's happening. But it's what standing represents here is the uprightness, like sitting up straight in the presence of the Buddhas and ancestors. You're no longer on hands and knees in the same sense you were before, and still there's always in your mind that essential state of hands and kneesness that's with you through this whole thing, the essential spiritual need and the cry that comes out of your heart to the eternal in the presence of that need, in consciousness of that need, out of that need. As I stand before it, for now I am standing up, I know that if life comes, there is only life, and if death comes, there is only death. I step off into death when my purpose for living ceases. I will not step off into death, for I do not wish to die. I do not wish to die. Remember, she'd got the clear message, you know, you can die if you choose, but you don't have to choose death. She'd got the teaching that points her the way here. She's been given the assurance. You know, you don't have to die here. The Eternal is basically saying, I still have use for you, you know. if you'll walk this difficult path, I still have use for you. I'm going to put you to use. You're not done yet. If you choose, but I will not make the choice for you. The Eternal does not make the choice for us. The Eternal shows us the way. At least the next step. The Eternal does not make the choice for us. And it doesn't matter to the Eternal what we do. It can sound like the Eternal doesn't care. It's just the opposite. Infinite love is going to continue loving whatever we do. Infinite love does not know how not to love. So how can it fundamentally matter? It matters to us, not to the Eternal. That's love beyond our capacity to really comprehend it. She goes on to quote from Dogen, "The secret of life is will. Words are its key." And she still has to, will is here, that she still has to make her choices. It's will and it's willingness. The words are the words of the scriptures and the teaching that comes directly from the Eternal here. Those are showing the way. And, we have to make the choices. She says, "This is the darkest moment that a being can know. If I had not seen the cleanness of the water 13 years ago, as when she had her Kensho, I would not now be able to have the faith to walk this road." And here is really being expressed that she's chosen the life route, and she senses this is going to be a tough haul here. And that's what starts to happen right away. She says, "The blackness is intense. Suddenly, just in front of my feet, I see a great chasm. The black lotus has opened to reveal a hell. Within it, a red-hot inferno blazes. There are sheer cliffs on either side that arch up as if they were the grasping fingers of an infernal pair of hands trying to clutch me should I falter. I am carrying a great boulder of karma on my back, for none of it has as yet been cleansed." On this boulder, by the way, these pictures are great. On the boulder is written, "Temple, politics, disciples, government officials." These are the things that or the external appearance of the load of karma, the responsibilities that that she has had to lay down. And she's carrying this boulder on, walking this like this this tightrope over this inferno, over this chasm. She's carrying this boulder over it. And this is still, you know, she's still carrying the boulder because the moment of full surrender has not come yet. When the moment of full surrender comes, that boulder dissolves. She says, I must cross this chasm, but I do not know how. I'm a bad reader. I must cross this chasm, but I do not know how, for there is nothing whatsoever that I can see that will make a bridge. A voice says, remember the Kensho. I remember it, and there before my feet I see a narrow plank which makes a dangerous bridge across the chasm. Balancing my huge boulder of karma, I put my foot upon the plank. I've always been terrified of heights, having suffered from vertigo for most of my life. Trust in the Kensho, says the voice. I trust, and immediately am on the other side. If I had fallen into that pit with my load of uncleansed karma, the thought is horrendous. I must go on. If I had fallen into that pit with my load of uncleansed karma, the thought is horrendous. I must go on. I didn't want to go down that road of thinking about that. In other words, if only I could confide in my disciple as to what is going on, but I dare not. He is a psychologist and could so easily misunderstand. Better by far that I wait until he too knows what can happen. In any case, I can barely speak, so I could not clearly explain these events to him. It is best as it is. I will cleanse my karma come what may. The way is being shown here. Again, faith. Through faith, the way across this inferno of suffering is found. And still carrying the load of the uncleansed karma, you know, she's going on now towards the cleansing of the karma, towards the Sangha that is trying to happen, that is now, you know, really ready to go. She is saying yes to the deepest possible process of Sangha. There's the kind of Sangha that happens when you, by your own effort of will, you know, focus on the things you've done that have caused suffering for yourself and others. And this Sangha can begin like that. And then there is the deeper Sangha that happens when this is just, you've said yes to what is ready to kind of unroll out of you, and it just, you say yes and poof, it's off, and it unrolls. And it's still hard work, but that's the direction the Sangha is going to go for a master here. It starts again with her choice, choosing to clean up the karma. Now she's aware of what the job is that's in front of her. She's aware now of what's coming as she goes on. She's chosen not to go off into oblivion, so this is what she's handed. You got your karma? It's got to be cleaned up, every bit of it. And now she's going to be helped by the kindest Kanzeans. And there's a saying in Soto Zen, the kindest Kanzean appears in hell. So now she's going to be helped by the kindest Kanzeans. And this is, you know, where the Sangha is really getting going on its own here. She says, I am barely across the chasm when I perceive a colossal cliff in front of me, in which there's a cleft so thin that it is barely more than a chink. I am no longer carrying my boulder, and this is as well, since there is no way in which I could possibly go on with it. The boulder's gone now. you know, there's a great step in surrender has happened. Behind me, I am being, and of course the boulder, think of the effort of carrying the boulder, you know. So now there's actually less effort required. Or you might say the effort is being focused in a more inner way. Dogen says it perfectly in Shishogi. I'll just take a second to look this up because it's, you know, I always have trouble finding Shishogi in here, but I'll just look it up real quick because it's so perfectly said here. Although karmic consequence for evil acts is inevitable at some time during the three periods, contrition makes it easier to bear by bringing freedom and immaculacy. As this is so, let us be utterly contrite before the Buddha. She's still going to be is hitting the karmic consequence. Again, in the painful karmic consequence of past non-perceptual action. And now she's without the boulder. That it's easier to bear now. Still going to be plenty hard, but it's easier to bear now. Because the true act of Sangha has begun. She's chosen that route. And here's one to remember. This is from also from the Shishogi, just a little later in the same little chapter of the Shishogi on contrition, on Sangha. By this act of recognition of our past behavior and our contrition, therefore, we open the way for the Buddhas and ancestors to help us naturally. And so keep that in mind as I read the next little thing here. I am no longer carrying my boulder. Behind me, I am being urged on by huge beings, one of which has the head of a horse and the other that of an ox. I can see only their shadows, but note that they have the form of human beings except for their heads. They urge me on toward the cleft in the cliffs, and I have no alternative but to go forward. Can I possibly get through so thin a cleft? Trust in the Kensho. You know for certain. Trust totally. Well, what do you know for certain? You know the eternal is. None of these things can diminish the eternal. Go on. Trust. O wonder of wonders, the cleft and the cliffs are gone. Faith and trust in that which is, the Lord of the house, are absolutely essential in this place. I am so close to death here. I dare not tell my disciple or he will rush for doctors. I must go on alone. I must not die. I will cleanse all my karma and see that which is face to face. So this is a way in which one cleanses one's karma of body, mouth, and will. I am obviously going through the hell that I have created for myself as a result of the evil karma I have created during this lifetime. If I do not face it before I die, I will have to pass my karma on to another, and I am not willing to do that. I created it, I must cleanse it. This is so important here for me to say again. Do not think that the experiences here are only metaphors. This is going through kind of bardo states, like a person after death. And the forms that manifest are the creation of our own karmic past. And they have the kind of reality they have, and it's a reality. And like all transitory phenomena, they are essentially unreal. the true and deepest sense, only the eternal is real. And don't psychologize it by thinking it's only metaphor. If you go through this kind of thing, believe me, it's plenty real. Again, I caution people, don't try to understand these things intellectually. She says, if I do not face it before I die, I will have to pass my karma on to another, and I'm not willing to do that. I created it, I must cleanse it. Personal responsibility, taking complete responsibility for herself. I created it, I have to do something about it. I must also remember that even if I cleanse all of this, I must still be ready to go through these hells again should I commit more wrong actions of body, mouth, and will at a later date. Always presuming that I survive now. I am now in total blackness except for the shadowy figure of the bull-headed being. I am on the ground and the being is tearing out my tongue with a huge pair of tongs. I am gagging for breath and my disciple is wringing his hands with worry. The being wants me to admit to something, but what? Then suddenly I realize that I must tell the truth concerning every secret wrong that I have ever had on my conscience from the beginning of my present existence in this world. All lies and exaggerations must be admitted to, however small. I admit to all that comes up for me. It is as if I am seeing everything that I should never have done as in a mirror. As I admit to each thing and feel shame and horror for having committed such acts, they fade into shadows and disappear. I speak of these things to my disciple who understands that he is receiving the confession of the dying and accepts what I say as totally and forever within a veil of secrecy between the two of us. I must trust him absolutely in this way. And Rim Master Daizui was always true to that trust. He never spoke about the things that Rim Master said that time. And I'll just say that whether a person's dying or not, that confession, any confession that comes to you as a priest, always has to be regarded as being confidential. And especially a confession like it's being called out of Rim Master here. This is an excruciatingly difficult thing for a person to go through because the shame and the horror are so great. And it's... And it is incredibly important to, if you're the person who is acting as a human witness and a human forgiveness and compassion. Hermes, you say, we need to know we're loved by both man and God. The eternal accepts it. It appears on the mirror and then disappears, dissolves into nothingness. And man also has a role there, human love and compassion. In 1998-99, Rim Master Mokri and I were given the job for each other, taking turns doing this. Listening to one another. And if one day one of us would be listening to one and the other, another day we'd be spewing it out. It's just coming out of you like, it's kind of like you've had this poo stored up in you, this bowel movement stored up in you for your whole life, and finally it's releasing. And it's released. There's such a vast quantity there, it just keeps coming. You know, it has to come over a period of time. And this is what's happening to your master here. And it's an immense privilege to go through this process, and it's a very hard process to go through. We all know when we've had to admit something that we were ashamed of, how hard that is. Well, and just the pain of seeing the harm we've done, to ourselves and others, just the pain without any band-aid on it, that's so hard. So what does it elicit in you if you're hearing it? Well, it elicits compassion. That's what it elicits. In the sense of the holiness of this process, the sanctity of the process, and the admiration for the person who's undergoing it, not judgment. You know, she went into this of her own choice. Now she's got to go through this. And this took some time. I don't know how long it took, but it took some time. She says, and I won't read every word here, but in placing such trust in him, I am placing him and myself in grave danger. Him in that his head could be turned, he could start feeling superior to his master who's confessing these things. Me in that I could be betrayed. She says, trust in the Kensho. The Kensho here is really representing the certainty of the eternal, isn't it? I mean, that's what it means here. Trust in the certainty of the eternal and go on, go on. Continues through another couple pages, and these beings that manifest here in the visions are, you know, they're the kindest Kanzan appearing in hell. They're the servants of the eternal, doing the eternal's work. You said you're willing, okay, here goes. And it comes spewing out of you, right out of your body. You know, these things are locked in tensions in your organs throughout your body, and it comes right out of you. And as it comes out, there's the emotional, the physical tension, the emotional pain, and then there's the memory. And that, you know, remember where she said, now I'm standing up. Well, this is the way you have to do the Sangha. You have to do it standing up in the presence of the Buddhas and ancestors, you know, hands and heart in Gassho. Yes, I did these things. Remember, Sangha is not self-blame. Sangha is not self-blame. It's not blame of any other person. It's simply, yes, I did these things. Yes, I did this. Yes, I did that. It is just acknowledging, yes, I did this. And right from that acknowledgement comes the natural response of the heart, oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Please help me not to do these things again. Please help me. And there's also the consciousness, I'm human and I will err again. And I pray that I will have the courage and the humility to again accept the truth of what I have done and do what I can to cleanse the karma. Even while River Master says here that she is cleansing the karma, you have to understand that the process that we experience as a cleansing is really the eternal's process. And that we do nothing through our own will in this, except accept responsibility for ourselves, our own actions. The real miracle of it is that that which has been such a burden in our heart dissolves into immaculacy. That which has been such a burden in our heart dissolves into immaculacy. For it never was a true reality. It was just something we were holding on to out of our guilt and our shame, and out of the consciousness of the suffering caused. This is a hard process to go through, and when one is going through it, one is conscious of the compassion of the eternal, and one is conscious of the process as being a manifestation of the love of the eternal. And one is conscious. Notice that River Master does not complain about the beings who are in seemingly demonic form, who are wresting the truth from her. They're helping the truth come out. They are the pain. They are the conscience, the pain of conscience. And I so well remember when I've gone through this process of Sangha, just how painful it is, and how it is that, like, you're just being held in front of this mirror. You're being held in front of this mirror, and every time you want to turn away from it, in the shame or in the fear, it's like you're thrust in front of it again. Come on, buddy, cop to it. You gotta cop to it. And that's the kindest kanzan appearing in hell. And so, even in the midst of hell, there is gratitude. And even in the midst of hell, there is bowing. And certainly in the midst of hell, there is compassion. Buddha, Siddharma, Vishnu Sangha.